this time on Weather Brains.
It's something I have avoided like the plague.
A 20% chance of a thunderstorm.
I don't know if anybody knows what that means.
We'll talk about POPs, probabilities of precipitation.
I just think they do more harm than good.
Why you won't hear James Spann use POPs in his forecasts.
I just totally reject the things.
Does Brian Peters believe in POPs?
No, I hate them. Nobody seems to understand them.
Plus, dealing with those tough temperature forecasts.
I can remember one morning back in the winter, the temperature in Gadsden was 19 degrees above zero. The temperature at the Birmingham International Airport was 45.
Also this time...
It sounded like I was back in the Navy and depth charges going off and a big 16-inch gun's going off.
When lightning strikes, we'll hear one Shelby County resident's tale of being home when the house took a direct hit. Welcome to Weather Brains, the podcast that's all about weather, produced by the weather geeks of The Weather Company in Birmingham, Alabama. Hello, I'm David Black, and with me for this podcast is James Spann, chief meteorologist with the ABC affiliate, ABC 3340 to be exact, from Birmingham, Alabama. Howdy, Mr. Spann, what you know?
You know, David, I'm enjoying this cool May weather here in the Deep South.
Man.
You won't believe this. You won't believe this. My wife actually turned on the fireplace for a brief time early this morning. Is that crazy or what? I can never remember. It's one of these gas deals. Where you can flip on a switch and it just comes on. It's not like you have to go chop wood or something, but it's like, I don't know, 5:30 or 6 o'clock, and I came down there and she had the fireplace on. I thought, wow.
I don't see you out chopping wood anyway behind the house, the log cabin that you live in. Just doesn't fit.
I have lumberjacks hired to do that.
Understand. Brian Peters, hello to you, sir.
Good evening, David and James.
And Mr. Jason Simpson with us, too. Howdy, Jason.
Hey, David.
Everybody's cool?
How's it going? Oh, yeah.
Everybody's real cool in this weather. James, why are we having such gorgeous weather? Is this just kind of a fall-like pattern in the spring?
Well, you know, we kind of got this block thing going. A lot of times talk about a block. It's where the upper air pattern is like a traffic jam where the troughs and the ridges just can't move, and we have been locked into this eastern U.S. trough in recent days. And pretty fascinating. Today, we're doing the podcast here on Monday, the 15th, at 5 o'clock this afternoon in Gadsden, Alabama. The temperature was 53.
Wow.
And let me tell you, that's about 30 below normal. We would normally be at 80, low 80s this time of the year. So 53, there was a light rain shower. It's like I did a double take on the observation. I thought, this has got to be wrong. Checked the airport, and they were showing 55, and Fort Payne had 57. So pretty amazing. And at the same time, I looked at the observation out in Salt Lake City, Utah, where Bill Murray, I think, is hanging out this week. He's at Park City. They had 87 underneath the ridge that corresponds with the trough. The ridge is out west, so while we are shivering a little bit, they're baking in May heat out there.
What would be the chances we could just hang on to this pattern for, say, the next 6 months?
I wish we could. You know, I've been doing this for so long, I can clearly tell you the two least favorite kind of issues I deal with, and that's droughts and heat waves. So Eastern U.S. trough sounds delicious to me in the summertime, but I just, you know, you can forget that. The westerlies are going to head north, and soon it's going to be hot, hazy, and humid, and we're going to have scattered afternoon thunderstorms every day. You know, it's up to Simpson now.
Uh-oh.
Young guys like Simpson to figure out how we're going to handle summer weather forecasting better. And to me, that's a great subject I wanted to mention, and Mr. Peters probably has some thoughts on this. When people ask me the most difficult kind of weather to deal with here in the southern United States where we are, it's summer. You know, June, July, and August, you know, what do you do? Every day, you know, you're going to have afternoon convection, and everything initiates on the mesoscale, and we need these smart guys like Simpson to you know, come on there at 7 o'clock in the morning and tell people exactly when and where it's going to rain. So I put that task on Jason.
We have high expectations on you, Mr. Simpson. So start delivering.
Well, one of our former interns, John Walker, who is at the University of South Alabama right now, actually came up with a little program. It was a very rough model of afternoon convection, and it really worked pretty well down on the Gulf Coast. It's not been tested and put through all the rigorous tests that the U.S. government has, and of course, Brian probably knows a whole lot more about that than I do. when it comes to the modeling and how rigorous that is. But I think we could probably make some advances on it in a few years. And just like James said, one of the most frustrating things out there is when somebody calls and has an event at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and you tell them they've got a 50-50 shot at getting a shower or a thunderstorm. Now, that number is really just a pop, a probability of precipitation. We really can't resolve it that far down. We're using a model with a scale down to a kilometer, and a thunderstorm can happen on a scale of much less than that. They form on boundaries that are less than 1 kilometer wide. So we just sometimes we hit it, sometimes we miss it, and sometimes we just get lucky.
Let me ask you guys this. If typical summertime convection is as tough to forecast as it is, wouldn't sea breeze convection on the coast be even more difficult?
I think the timing issue might, but overall, I think sea breeze may be a little bit easier than just summertime convection, especially in North Alabama. For many who don't know, I've spent time in Missouri. I've spent time in Mississippi.
You did time in Missouri and Mississippi, right?
I did time in Mississippi.
Just kidding.
Jason was in that city jail in Meridian.
Yeah. Some kind of barbecue incident or something, I think.
Barbecue and...
Very ugly.
Yeah, thanks for bailing me out of that, by the way, James. I really appreciate that. I still owe you for getting me out of that mess.
No problem.
Hey, this group don't look for any help whatsoever.
Yeah, and that comes from somebody who was at a casino in Mississippi recently. So, you know, consider the source, right?
Yeah. Right.
Ooh.
Actually, I think sea breezes are very easy to forecast.
Sir, I thought they would be very tough, but that shows what I know. You guys know more about it.
Well, a lot of it has to do with wind direction. Especially if you have a unidirectional flow through the lower end of the PBL, or you have the wind blowing out of the south off the Gulf of Mexico for the first 1,000 feet in the atmosphere, and you're going to have some instability, then you're pretty much guaranteed a sea breeze. It doesn't matter what time of year it is. Now, in North Alabama, I like to use this example when I go talk to kids and tell them just how difficult it is to forecast here. I can remember one morning back in the winter, couldn't tell you what day it was for sure, but the temperature in Gadsden was 19 degrees above zero. The temperature at the Birmingham International Airport was 45.
Wow.
Now, you talk about something that's tough to forecast. I like to try to put out a little city map every morning that has forecast highs and forecast lows. Well, I've noticed that I tend to err toward the middle. Usually I'll have a range of about 10 degrees from the northeast to the southwest. I may have a high of 60 in Gadsden and 72 in Tuscaloosa at the most. And some days it may be 48 in Gadsden and 75 in Tuscaloosa.
Well, you guys talk about wedges sometimes coming in from the east, so I guess that really plays havoc with this.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh,
yes. I think in North Alabama we have some of the toughest forecasting that there is because we've got the deep valleys up in the northeast part of the state. We've got the Black Prairie, the Black Belt, and these are all geographical features. They really don't have much to do with the atmosphere, but they have a feedback mechanism. The amount of solar radiation that's absorbed or emitted back up as heat or reflected off of surfaces or absorbed by the trees, the plants, and you have all the evaporation. There's so many different factors that play in, and it's just amazing when you try to think that we try to wrap our little finite brains around something that is so, so big every day. I think we're lucky to get as close as we do sometimes.
That's amazing. I've never understood cold air wedges. I hear you guys talk about them. I know what they are. They're an intrusion of cold air coming from the east. But what causes that? Because we normally don't get cold air from that direction, right?
Peters is the king of the wedge. He knows all.
I wouldn't say that. Generally, you end up with a large high-pressure system, and I like to think of over Pennsylvania, but it can be in Pennsylvania or even a little further north. Generally, if it's too far south, you don't get the cold air coming down the east side of the Appalachians. But if you get a high around Pennsylvania, centered over Pennsylvania, and then the number I like to use is around 1040 or so, but you can get wedging effects, I believe as low as about 10,030 millibars, but the wedge doesn't come as far as Alabama. Alabama, or Georgia, has it a lot worse than Alabama does because they get hit by the wedge. Jason's recalling an event there in Alabama, and I recall an event during the Olympics, and we were forecasting for Atlanta for you know, the weather support for the Olympic Games, preparing forecasts just for each of the specific venues. How many people are willing to forecast at the end of July, 1st of August, are willing to forecast a high in Atlanta of 78? I don't know many people who would be willing to do that, and I felt good. I forecast a high of 82. The forecast office was forecasting a high of 85, and the high that day was 78, and it was the wedge.
You'd probably have people thinking you were nuts to put that out in a public forecast, right? What is he
like
thinking?
I said, I was just happy that I did better than the guys in the forecast office, you know, because there were 15 of us in the Olympic weather support team. And we were from all over the country, and I think one of the reasons that I got into it was that I knew a little bit about southeastern weather and the wedge. That's what I put in my application anyway. But I was real pleased, and the fact that it only got to 78, I mean, who can forecast that in Atlanta in the summer?
Do the computer models handle wedges very well?
No. Well, they do. They handle them better today than they used to. They've been notoriously poor. But you see a lot more of the wedge pattern now on the GFS especially. It seems to be getting a little better handle on that. But they don't. It doesn't usually get, I think, the magnitude of the wedge. And what we have to watch in Alabama is we've got to watch the strength of the wedge. The pattern may show up with a wedge pattern, which you can recognize, but you don't think it's going to get past Atlanta or past the state line. And then all of a sudden, you know, it blows into, and I've seen some wedges blow as far south as Troy and over past Montgomery and definitely to Birmingham.
I think I've gotten a lot better at the wedge forecasting, David, since I've started doing the weather on the radio in Atlanta. And this was several years ago on J93.3. I have to get my plug in here. But doing the weather in Atlanta every day on broadcast media has taught me a lot about the wedge. And I've started watching some of the amateur radio, you know, packet automated reporting stations, APRS stations with weather data in the western part of Georgia, and you can watch the wedge move. I mean, you can just watch it coming, and I think I've gotten a lot better at it in recent years, and as Brian has pointed out, the modeling has handled it a whole lot better too.
So I guess the models still miss it.
I guess the big challenges then for you guys in the coming months would be summertime thunderstorms, not so much cold air intrusion in the summer, and then maybe we're halfway into the month of May. We will be talking tropics before too long. So I guess those are the big challenges.
Before we get on tropics, I want to talk about one topic, David, about this summer forecasting. And it's something that, I don't know, summer is my least favorite season to deal with weather forecasting because in the broad scheme of things, it sounds the same every day. On the mesoscale, it's different every day. But my subject I want to talk about for just a minute, it's the dreaded pop, the probability of precipitation, and it's something I have avoided like the plague in my days as a, you know, television weather person.
You are not a 30% guy.
No, I am not. And in the summer, in a weather service, the government, they'll use it, you know, every forecast, and I stay away from it because in the summer, almost every day, you're going to hear, you know, if you listen to a weather service forecast, and I'm not condemning these guys because they have to do what they're told, you know, by the superiors and their formatting, and Brian can probably address this, but, you know, you pull up a July forecast from the weather service, and it's probably going to say partly sunny, scattered afternoon thunderstorms, high, you know, 92, probability of precipitation 30%. Now, what I'd like to do is take 100 people in our coverage area, not weather people, just, you know, Joe Q public, and ask them, what does that mean? And there's a good chance you're going to get 100 different answers. And no matter what happens, it's not going to work. Either it's raining or it's not raining. And if the forecast, you know, if on a typical summer day, somebody's going to get drenched and somebody hears a 30% chance of rain, they think you're nuts. You know, it ought to be 100%. To be perfectly correct, it ought to be 0 or 100. And I could do a long 30-minute sermon about this, but I just think they do more harm than good. And you won't see me touching those pops, especially during the summer. And I guess my question for Brian, is that something the Weather Service is bound to do, is to use these pops?
Well, they're bound to use probability of precipitation if they're forecasting precipitation. But there's no guideline, unless there's been one since I retired, that says anything about using a particular percentage. I think the problem is shared by them as well as you, James, that how do you describe it? And you describe it the same way, and that is you can't tell anyone exactly where those showers are going to be. And so you end up, as a forecaster, putting out a probability, and it's a case of, as you said, some people are going to get drenched, some people are going to stay completely sunny, some people are going to be partly cloudy, and the bottom line is they end up with a 30% value. I think one of the things that's interesting about probabilities, and I'd love to just go down to the Galleria and survey 100 people and just find out exactly what the answer to your question is, James, but I suspect, and I think this is becoming even true among Weather Service forecasters, is that there's an element thrown into probability that is really not in probability, and that's time. You know, take this situation. You're putting out your forecast, and there's a line of thunderstorms in central Mississippi, and you're absolutely positive that line of thunderstorms is going to hold together all the way to the Carolinas. And so everybody in the state of Alabama is going to get rain. And you know what happens? Most forecasters will put down something like 50, 60, or 70% chance. Nobody will put down 100. And the reason is they think, well, 100% means it's going to rain all day. And that's not really true. The probability is only whether or not you will receive a hundredth of an inch and how much of the area will receive that. So the probability is actually composed of two terms. The forecaster's expectation, if you will, reduced to a number between 0 and 1 of whether he or she thinks it's going to rain. And then the other value is how much of the area that's going to be covered. So, for example, if you think 100% of the area is going to get rain, but you're only 50% certain, then you end up with a 50% forecast. If you're 100% certain it's going to rain, and you're sure that 100% of the area is going to get covered, then you forecast 100%, even though there isn't, and so there is no term in there at all with the time. So if you have rain for 10 minutes in a 12-hour period, and you get a hundredth of an inch, that's really 100%. And I'm like, James, I like to forecast either it's going to rain or it's not going to rain. But that's really hard to do because it doesn't rain for everybody.
I'll tell you what gets me is when you hear probabilities of precipitation being less than 10%. What does that mean? That's irritating to me.
That's isolated showers.
Look, here's the way I think we ought to go around a room here and everybody describe how you handle a typical summer day. You know, the Weather Service forecast is partly sunny, scattered afternoon thunderstorms. Probability of precipitation is 30%. I would much rather be descriptive. You know, if I'm down at the Walmart talking to Joe Q Public, and they want to know what the weather's going to do today, I'll tell them it's really going to be hot and steamy. It'll be sunny in the morning. A few folks are going to get a storm between about 2 o'clock and 7 o'clock. If it rains, it'll rain for about 30 minutes, and it moves on. To me, that does a better service than this probability of precipitation thing. And I don't know if anybody knows what that means. I get these emails all the time. People say, settle this bet for me. Does it mean that 30% of the land area is going to get rain?
Right.
And the answer is no. It has time and spatial considerations. So I just totally reject that. And what's funny, people come to me and say, I heard you say on television last night there's a 30% chance of rain, and it poured on me. And if they say that, I know they have nothing to do with watching me on television. They heard it off some Weather Service forecast. But
Jason,
I will pose a question to Jason. How do you handle it?
Well, you know, I'm a lot younger in the business than you are.
But you're smart. You're the smartest guy in the shop here. So what do you do?
And what do the folks up in Coleman County think of Pops?
Well, I'll tell you what they think. And it's one of two things. Either it's a coverage percentage or it's a probability scheme, as in almost like a casino game where you know the house has a 1-5 odd or something like that. In my book, when I've had experience with this, people want to know what the percent chance of rain is. They have it in their mind that anything, and I'm generalizing here, anything above 50 means they're probably going to get rain at some point today. Anything above 80 means that they are probably going to get rain most of the day. And anything below 20 means, hey, it's hit or miss. What I like to do on the morning show is say, you know, we've got a pretty decent chance of seeing showers and thunderstorms today on a widespread basis, or a not-so-widespread basis. We'll see one or two thunderstorms. And then at noon, the great thing about me being on at noon is right before these things fire up, I can see them on a visible satellite, and I can start calling out towns that are going to see rain in the next 2 hours. Beyond that, here's what I think is going to happen for the rest of the afternoon. I like doing those day part forecasts where I think we have a greater coverage of thunderstorms at noon to 3 than we do at 10 a.m., or a greater coverage of thunderstorms from 8 p.m. to midnight. I think that's the best way for me to handle it given the shift that I work, but On the other hand, you know, James working 24 hours in advance of an afternoon where storms are going to be either more or less widespread, I think you've got to do it that way, the way that you described, where you say, you know, hot and steamy, a hit-or-miss thunderstorm. I still don't think people understand that very well. And, you know, I can remember years ago, James, watching you in the afternoons in 98, 99, when you used to have the Pinpoint Weather Predictor. And it was a—I yep. believe that was the MM5 model, right?
Yep.
The MM5 model, and it would show clusters of thunderstorms all over the place. Now, that was a good visual representation of how widespread the coverage would be, but it was not a good representation of exactly where rain would fall. And I have to wonder if we might want to go back to something like that as modeling improves and we can get a better handle on, okay, these things are more likely in the northern half of the state. Because if you look at that MM5 model from the Global Hydrology and Climate Center up in Huntsville, it's pretty dead on a lot of days with the coverage, not the exact spot, but the coverage.
Well,
that was long-winded. I'm sorry.
That was a good answer, but I still stand by the statement. I think as a forecaster, if you use probability of precipitation on a summer day, all it's going to do is make people mad, it's going to get you in trouble, and you'll have the perception of not knowing what you're talking about. And I just totally reject the things for that very reason.
I think you're right.
I've heard James...
descriptive, use descriptive terms and give them an idea of the hours when the best chance of a shower will be, and if a rain comes, how long will it rain? That will help people plan it instead of this, you know, 30% thing. And it just even in the cold weather season, I stay away from it as much as possible. We do produce a fax that goes to businesses and clients that really, you know, plan, you know, their business day around that. We use that in that fax, but on television, you hear me use a percentage of maybe once every 5 years, and that's it.
I've heard James give many a forecast during the summer talking about just a small chance of a thunderstorm in a few spots, and that's a lot clearer to me. And I'm not trying to bash the Weather Service either, but that's a lot clearer to me than 20%, 30%, less than 10%. I have to sit there and think mathematically, what does that mean? I've got to go through some kind of a conversion process to understand it, and then even then I'm not sure I really have a good handle on it.
And I'll tell you this, David, I've looked at so much research over the years it makes my head spin, but I've looked at research on our audience, the people that watch television, and I've seen research on what people remember from a forecast that you put on television, and near the top, if you use it, they're going to remember that probability of precipitation. It's almost as if they want it, but I don't want them to see it because it's going to lead them down the wrong path, and after a while, they'll believe you don't know what you're talking about. So I've tried to stay away from that. Now, Brian probably loves them.
I hate them.
Brian, are you a pot man?
No, I hate them. Mm. Always have, because as we've all been discussing, nobody seems to understand them.
Even in the weather business, I think some people don't understand them.
Well, you just said, James, there's a time element, and the official definition of probability of precipitation, there is no time element.
Well, see there, I don't understand it either. I mean, and that goes to prove my point. I mean, people have been doing this for a long time don't get it. How in the world is, you know, Joe Q Public going to get it?
Exactly.
I agree exactly.
Before we get off this subject, I want Brian to let everybody listening to know what the exact definition of probability of precipitation is. If there's a 30% chance of rain today, what does that mean?
Well, it's two terms. It's the forecaster's confidence that there will be rain in a value from 0 to 1 and the amount of aerial coverage that he or she thinks will be covered. So, for example, if you think, okay, let's take a summer day. If
make this understandable for me in Shelby County.
Okay.
Yeah, don't lose us now.
Let's just take a summer day. As a forecaster, you are very confident that there will be showers. So your confidence level is 90 or 100%, so 0.9 or 1. And let's just say you're absolutely sure that there's going to be showers. That's 100%, so that's a 1. And then you have to figure out, well, how many, what kind of coverage will I have in the showers? So then in that case, the probability actually becomes the coverage of showers that you think. Now, if you're not confident, let's say you only think there's, you know, I'm maybe 50 or 60% sure that we're going to see showers, and I think there's only going to be a small area. Well, I take, say, 60%, 0.6, multiply it by, I think there's only going to be maybe 30% coverage. I come up with 18%. You round that to the nearest 10, that's 20%.
And then the Weather Service does try to use descriptive terms. The first part of the forecast, you know, partly sunny, partly cloudy with scattered afternoon showers, probability of precipitation. And then that becomes the combination of the forecaster's confidence level and the aerial coverage. But there is no timing term or time term involved in that. But and yet, I do believe that over a long period, we have begun to associate that because forecasters have a tendency to forecast 100% when we're going to get an all-day rain, and they forecast a lower percentage if it's going to be a showery rain and therefore not an all-day rain. So I think we have by kind of guilt by association here, we have inferred a timing element in there, but it really, in the official definition of probability of precipitation, there is no timing element or time element involved. So
it's, well, I've just learned something new.
I bet a lot of people didn't know this. I didn't.
I've been told by Weather Service employees it has nothing to do with coverage. So
right, know, yeah, that's what
I believe Brian. He's the WCM guy. He knows this stuff. So that makes me all wonder, right, if everybody in the Weather Service understands how it works.
I don't think everybody does, James.
Maybe not.
And that's why I don't like probabilities, because the word probability, you begin to think in terms of, as Jason mentioned, you know, the odds, and that's really not, you know, the odds. We're not the Weather Service is not forecasting the odds, and yet probability sounds like that's what we're forecasting or what they're forecasting. So.
Well, speaking of thunderstorms and forecasting, the afternoon of May 10th is a day one resident here in Shelby County, Alabama, is never going to forget. That's when Jack Evans and his wife Nadine got a very unexpected and violent visit from the heavens above. Jack and Nadine were at their home in Chelsea when it was hit by lightning. Were you home?
I was home. I was in the den. Nadine had just, a second before it hit, stepped out of the shower.
What did it sound like?
It sounded like I was back in the Navy and depth charges going off and a big 16-inch gun's going off.
Tell me what it did.
Well, the lightning struck at two different places. First, it struck toward the street. It came down near a tree. Strange part about it, it hit the ground maybe a foot from the tree at the very furthest. Put two holes in the ground about, oh, I don't know, 8-10 inches deep, went down the side of the driveway, went under the driveway, did not disturb the concrete, came out the other side, and it looked like a mole had dug a hole about 2 inches, 3 inches deep, got to a certain spot, and it went straight down about a foot or more that we could see, and that's just about in line with the cable from the telephone company, is maybe the fiber optic cable that they had laid in. They got the markers up. That was just about where it is. The second place, again, did not hit a tree, but came down right through the limbs, if you will. Struck underneath went under the tree, again, another about a foot deep, 10 inches deep. Jumped from there to the motorhome. Went inside, because that's the side where my electricity cable comes out when I'm parking the vehicle. Came inside there and virtually destroyed the converter panel, which is the AC-DC panel. It knocked the door open, charred everything, bent the breakers out of shape, bent wires and cracked them. And it's underneath the beds, but it, surprisingly enough, didn't burn the motorhome up. There was no fire there.
That's lucky, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. And then it followed the cable, which was plugged into electricity from the house, up on the deck, disintegrated the end of the, it's a heavy-duty extension cord, a number 12 wire with a big heavy-duty double receptacle on the end of it, virtually blew to pieces. That didn't stop it. It went down to the area where the electricity comes out of the basement, and that's right at the end of the grill. And I have a natural gas grill. It totally blew the end of the control side of the grill, just blew the panel apart, threw the knobs all over the place, and of course at that time the gas line is shut off right there, but the tube, which is about 10 feet long, goes up to the grill, of course was full of gas, and of course that just perpetuated the situation. It took a 5-gallon drum and split it in 100 different ways. I have a big filter system there for the water pond. It blew it all to pieces and burned half of it in a cart that I kept all my grilling tools and stuff in, and utensils for the grill. It just burned it to a crisp.
This is all stuff it did on the outside of your house, not to mention what happened inside.
Inside, that is correct. It went around the corner, back into the basement, and where it was connected to the power in the basement. The power is in conduit, PVC conduit, 1.5-inch overhead run, and then a 3/4-inch drops down to various receptacles, and it took 3 of them and virtually blew them to pieces. No conduit pieces are there. It's just thousands of pieces of gray conduit all over the basement. And that part of the explosion was directly underneath the master bathroom where Nadine had come out of the shower.
Did you say jump in Jehoshaphat's?
Almost. After that was all over, and I went upstairs, and the fire department, of course, was there to put the fire out on the deck, which burnt the deck in a pretty good spot. We had no electricity in the house after that point, with the exception of a few overhead lights and one receptacle.
Sometimes people report smelling certain odors after a strike. Did you notice that?
Yes. It more sounded mellow. In our case, like burning plaster, plastic, and also insulation burning.
Did you lose some electronics in the house?
Yes, I lost a satellite signal from outside. It didn't touch the receiver or the VCR or the TV that the receiver sits on. However, it did take another television out. However, it has a VCR and the stereo system and its associated equipment are plugged into the same power strip as the TV, and they weren't touched, as strange as it may seem.
What about computer equipment?
In the basement, I lost a laptop, lost one piece of radio equipment, and I don't quite understand that, but then again, that's lightning. We did lose a washing machine. It just stopped working. It didn't smoke, burn, or anything else.
It just quit working?
It just quit working.
So is this a good reason to have homeowners insurance?
It's an exceptionally good reason to have homeowners insurance or any other insurance that you can carry that will cover you with lightning and strikes. I didn't see any lightning prior to this and after it. It just there just wasn't any present.
Sounds as if this bolt had you in its sights.
There's that possibility.
And all of this happened in what amount of time?
Basically instantaneous.
You ever been hit by lightning, or any of your property been hit by lightning before?
Never. That was my first experience.
What has it taught you?
Don't take a shower when it's lightning.
What was your wife's experience out of this?
She was terrified because when the power equipment receptacles in the basement exploded, that was directly below her, and it shook her and the house and the shower doors and everything.
At least nobody got hurt.
No one was hurt.
What are you going to do the next time you hear about a severe thunderstorm warning for Shelby County? Anything?
Pay strict attention to where it's located and disconnect as much things as possible.
I hope this doesn't happen to you again.
Well, there is an adage, lightning never strikes the same place twice.
Do you believe that?
No, but I've never been hit by lightning before either, so your guess is as good as mine.
Jack Evans estimates it's going to cost between $5,000 and $10,000 to fix everything that got smoked. He's expecting it to take about a month to get everything put back together. Mm. So, guys, don't take a shower when there's lightning around. That's the moral.
You know, my mom taught me that when I was about 4.
And you've never forgotten it.
I've never forgotten that one.
That comes from the days when we had metal pipes, I think.
Yep.
I do want to say Jack's a good friend, and I sure sorry to hear what happened to him, but it's absolutely amazing hearing him describe how the lightning traveled. It's just absolutely amazing. The only thing I can tell him is that it certainly probably followed the easiest possible path, which doesn't always make sense to us as humans, and also lightning can strike more than once in one location, but I hope it doesn't happen to Jack again.
Well, the easiest possible path can be people sometimes, so I guess we're glad that everybody got out of it unhurt anyway.
David, I remember sitting in a radio station back when I was a teenager in Tuscaloosa. This was a 1,000-watt AM radio station, and you know, the AM stations, the whole tower is the radiator, and the tower of the radio station, this is WTBC in Tuscaloosa, was almost 500 feet, big tower for that frequency on 15th Street. Many people from Tuscaloosa might remember that. I was sitting in that control room, and I got a bite, and that was the first bite from lightning I've ever had in my life. We took a direct hit and came through the transmitter, and I was wearing headphones and was adjusting the mic, and let me tell you what, a little spark gap flew from my head back over that mic.
A little tingle?
Little bitty tingle, and I will never forget that, and from that moment on, I have very healthy respect for lightning, and you know, J.B. Elliott, the great one, the Alabama weather legend, he'll tell you the one thing he's afraid of when it comes to weather, it's not tornadoes, it's not hurricanes, it's lightning. So it's something that, you know, it's very common, and you just have to be careful.
Amen.
Lightning's often called the underrated killer, and I think we know why, because we see it off in a distance, and it's kind of pretty. Coming home the other night, I think it was the night Jack was struck, I saw one of the most fascinating lightning strikes that I have ever seen. The lightning came out of the sky at about a 45-degree angle, turned, and went horizontally for a good distance, and then made a sharp 90-degree turn and came straight to the ground. I've never seen lightning, you know, make that many sharp curves or sharp turns.
And it doesn't take long to decide that path either, does it?
No. I mean, that's one of the things that's interesting about it, is it's so rapid.
But, you know, the other thing, David, you know, summer is thunderstorm season. We, in that discussion of probability of precipitation, almost every afternoon we've got convection somewhere around here across the Deep South. And that's when kids are outside, they're at the ballpark or at the pool. And I don't, you know, I think all adults have a kind of lose the respect for that if you haven't dealt with it in a long time. But and I know there's all kind of lightning safety rules, but the easiest one to remember is when you hear thunder, go inside. You know, you can do the multiplication thing and all that, but that just tells you where the last lightning strike was. When you hear thunder, get inside, and be sure the kids do that, and we'll be okay this summer. But every summer, it seems like we hear of tragic loss of life from people killed by lightning that just didn't have any respect for it.
Yeah, and we've talked in previous podcasts about people getting complacent when severe thunderstorm warnings are issued. You've got to remember those typical summertime thunderstorms only takes one to cause a real tragedy. So I hope that we do have a safe summer. A reminder that the opinions expressed on Weather Brains are strictly those of the people speaking and are not necessarily those of ABC 3340. If you'd like to contact us, our email address is question@weatherbrains.com. We'd love to hear from you. For James Spann, Jason Simpson, and Brian Peters, I'm David Black. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time for more Weather Brains. Adios.